inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today is doing something that I think is really interesting. He bought a three-unit building, but he's not house hacking. And a lot of people that would buy a building like that would move into one of the units, rent out the other two, and hopefully be able to live there for free. My guest is renting out all three units, and he's a renter himself somewhere else in town. So I want to see why he's doing this and how it's working out. So let's take a real quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back, and we'll meet Steve Torti from Providence. Are you looking for actionable steps to create wealth and passive income? As a top-ranked business and investing podcast with over 800 five-star reviews, The Passive Real Estate Investing Show is packed with strategies and insight for putting money in your pocket. Marco Santarelli from Narada Real Estate Investments brings his expertise and knowledge on both passive and turnkey real estate investing, and he provides listeners with helpful tools and tips to create the wealth you've always wanted. Head over to iTunes or Google Play today and subscribe to Passive Real Estate Investing Podcast, or visit PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. That's PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Hey, Steve, why don't we start with you giving us just a real quick Cliff Notes version of your background, just so we can get to know you a little bit better.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Steve. I'm from Providence, Rhode Island. My background has really always been in sales, and specifically advertising sales.
Okay.
So I've moved around a little bit, but actually primarily billboards, which are pretty close to real estate investing when you look at it. You know, you buy the asset, you rent out the space, which is your tenants, and the advertisers right. being your tenants, and then you depreciate the asset like a house. So it actually kind of has gone back and forth between my real estate investing and what I do full time.
Yeah, that's interesting, because yeah, you're right. It's really kind of the same concept with owning rental properties. So
the only problem is that there's advertisers instead of tenants that you're
renting
to.
right. So all right, so you have a three unit property. Let's kind of talk about, like, when you decided you wanted to buy a rental property, like, how did you decide, like, what neighborhoods to look at, what type of property you were looking for? Like, how did you kind of figure everything out?
Right. So, well, I mean, I know the state very well. It's obviously a small state, the smallest that we have. And so I know it very well. I grew up in really the middle of it. So that really wasn't too much of an issue. And here locally, the numbers aren't so astronomical like San Francisco or, Boston, where it's really hard to get in. So it was really just – and I bought recently. So it was about finding the place that not everybody was bidding on.
Okay.
So I know I didn't want to be in certain areas of Providence where I know I'd always have trouble, especially being my first-time landlord. So I could rule those out just by knowing the market. So, I mean, and I was in investing groups before, I bought, and I talked to a lot of people and that sort of thing too. So not only going off of my gut.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, knowing the market.
Okay. So then you ended up buying a three unit. Did you consider buying a duplex or a fourplex or a single family, or was a three unit really kind of your focus?
For me, any two, three, or four. I didn't want a single family. It's just... to me, it doesn't make sense. Why I follow. I'm a big Grant Cardone follower, and if you talk to him, he would say that four is a waste of time. So,
really, why does he say that? Why does he say four is a waste?
Because he says you should be saving up $100,000 and buying a complex.
Okay, yeah.
For me, that just doesn't make sense. I mean, I think for most people that doesn't. But I like his theory of bring on the debt and put as little money down as possible.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get as big as I could get with 5% down, which was three to four.
Now, the other thing that you're doing that's, I guess, kind of what Grant Cardone preaches is you don't actually live in the unit, where a lot of people we've had on the podcast, they'll buy a three unit, they'll house hack, they'll live in one of the units and rent out the other two and end up living for free. But you don't actually live at the three unit. You rent the whole thing out and you rent yourself. So is that kind of inspired by Grant Cardone?
Yes and no. I probably would have done it, you know, even if he doesn't say to do that. But for me, because A, I didn't want to live next to the tenants. I want some space between me and them. They've got my personal cell number. I come over whenever they need them. I'm still close. But it just made more sense to separate myself. And then on top of it, you know, yeah, I could live in there and live for free. And yeah, I'm spending $200 or $300 more a month to rent on my own versus what I would be sacrificing by living in the property. Mm-hmm. But to me, that $200 and $300 is well worth it.
Yeah.
You know, I have a much nicer place. I'm on my own. So for me, it makes sense. But with that in mind, I mean, I understand that I'm spending money on rent. My next move is most likely going to be an owner-occupied place that, you know, I could buy on my own.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because that's something that I think about a lot, because for the house that I live in, I could rent a property in this neighborhood cheaper than what my mortgage payment is. So it's...
Well, that's the other thing, too. It's yeah, you know, a lot of people, my family and friends always tell me that, well, you know, why are you doing that? You're spending more money renting than you could just live in your own house. But it's not. I mean, right. I know now from firsthand experience how much it costs to run a house.
Right.
You know, yep. So I mean, if I'm going to buy something on my own or buy a condo or whatever, I mean, there's a lot of stuff every month that comes up. And with this, it's just the rent payment, you know?
Right.
That's what I owe them. I call them when something's broken and I worry about my own property.
So how has it been working out with working full time and then dealing with three tenants? Has it taken up a lot of your time or has it gotten in the way of living your life?
No. So, I mean, I use my background's in sales, like I said, so I'm on the road a lot. If I need to stop over there for something, I can do it. But most of the time they understand I come by on the weekends, I do the grass, I do the maintenance. And then if they have anything for me, they tell me then. So, I mean, it really hasn't been anything that's too big of a deal. I mean, with that said though, if there's a, you know, a screen door or something that needs to be replaced, I do hire somebody. So they come by during the day and do it.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, small compared to everything.
Tell me about this property, because it seems like you got a great property. So you've created $40,000 in equity by basically fixing the property up, right?
Yeah, exactly. So when I got it, it was actually owned by this company, Gateways to Change. If they're in your area, look them up, because they get some government funding. They had bought this property for $260,000 or $280,000, I think. Right at the height of the market, and then I bought it for $170,000. So they actually had to come up with money just to sell it.
Okay.
And because they're funded by the government, they just decide, okay, this property's gone. We're going to list it, and they don't really care what hit they take.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was, you know, look them up, and they do a great service too. I mean, they house people that have some mental issues but can still live on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this house was, and on top of that. That actually scared some people away. It just was it wasn't – when I walked in, I was like, oh, I don't know about this. But that's why everybody ran away. And I reached out to a family friend that was an agent and also did some renting, some investing. And he was like, buy this. And I was like, you sure? And he's like, yeah, buy this. And I'm like – I ran the numbers and I'm like, all right, he's right. So I bought it and then I added two bedrooms. So there was two laundry rooms in the building, which didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So I made those both bedrooms, and then, you know, just by putting up a wall, it really wasn't that complicated. I mean, I don't have really any background in, carpentry or anything, but it was easy enough to do. So put up a wall in there, you know, cut a hole in the wall for a door downstairs. And then all of a sudden there's two extra bedrooms, put a new roof on it, cleaned it up, painted it, fixed the fence. And, you know, they came by and with an appreciating market, you know, it gave me $40,000. So
now,
that was less than a year.
Did you get like contractor estimates before you bought the property, or did you buy it and just knew that you were going to be able to make things work?
Well, I mean, I didn't have a number in mind in terms of how much equity I wanted. That was just bonus.
Okay.
So, I mean, I knew roughly that it would be about $10,000 for the roof and the gutters. And that was obviously the biggest expense. Mm-hmm. And the other stuff, I just you know, set some money aside, do the work on my own, and
okay,
I could have made it work. So yeah,
so
I
you,
mean, like I said, the equity was bonus. I mean,
yeah,
it was just
right.
Like, hey, can this thing make money month to month? You know.
So yeah, let's talk about some of the numbers. All right, so what's your mortgage payment every month?
It's $1,134. That does not include taxes, though.
Okay.
Oh, and sorry, insurance. I pay that separate.
The taxes and insurance, or
just the insurance?
Okay.
So. Yeah, and there's the other thing too, is because the roof was bad when I bought it, they wouldn't put me, this is the other thing to look at, they wouldn't put me at a regular insurance rate. They wanted to go, they call it a Rhode Island joint reinsurance, which basically is just more expensive. So it's actually $2,800 a year right now.
Okay, okay.
So I've got to get that down. But, so if you figure it all in, I'm actually doing the math right now. Yeah, so $233. Right, so we're about $1,300.
Okay, $1,300, and then how much do the units rent out for?
So the three bedroom is $1,100, and that one's Section 8.
Okay.
And then the two bedroom is $1,025, and the one bedroom is $850.
Awesome.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so $2,975 a month coming in.
$2,975 coming in, and tell me again what you said the mortgage payment was with everything, with taxes.
$1,300.
Yeah. Okay, so you're doing great there. That
yeah,
that is awesome. Now, after the buying this, you've owned this for how long? About a year?
Just over a year.
So how has it been dealing with the tenants? Like, have you had any problems, or has there been any turnover, or has anything gone wrong?
So the only thing, there hasn't been any turnover. I've been really lucky there. A lot of people, they're wary about the Section 8, but she has been great. I mean, she just needs it. You know, she's in a position where she needs the help,
mm-hmm.
and it's not, you know, it's nothing against, you know, her personally or anything. So she's been a phenomenal tenant, actually the best one.
So it is
a mix.
You've got one Section 8 tenant and then two just regular cash tenants.
Yeah, exactly.
Why did you do that as opposed to going all cash tenants or all Section 8 tenants?
So, upstairs that's the Section 8 tenant with a three-bedroom. And I just figured, hey, if I can get this money guaranteed as a new investor, that's going to make a ton of sense for me.
Right.
So I basically, in my mind, kind of anchored the property, right, with a Section 8 tenant because that's a direct deposit.
I said,
all right,
that's
I bought this house, right? I'm looking at this thing. I'm like, I got to fix all of this stuff. I got a mortgage payment due, and I don't know what I'm doing, right? So I basically just went upstairs and said, all right, I'm going to put this wall up. I'm going to clean this place out. I'm going to get it lead certified, and I'm going to get my money guaranteed from the city.
Right.
Right? So then I'm like, okay, once that's all set, I mean, that basically covered the mortgage. So
right.
Like, okay, I can breathe. So that $1,100 is guaranteed to me, or most of it.
Yeah.
And then
that really
– like,
let me make sure everyone understands that, because that's really smart. So you've got her $1,100 a month rent coming in that gets direct deposited from the city, and then you've got your mortgage payment of $1,134. So basically your mortgage payment is covered by the Section 8, and then the other two cash-paying tenants, that's basically your expenses, your insurance, whatever
exactly.
else, your profit. That's great. That's actually really a great way to do it.
Yeah, it really, and it made a ton of sense. And she, you know, you feel like you're helping somebody out a little bit. And
yeah,
you know, it worked out. And yeah, like I said, once I got that rented, I kind of was like breathing easy, because I'm like, I know, you know, the bank will always, you know, have you buy the house based off of your personal income. So it's like, all right, I know I can afford it, but you know, that's kind of a lot all
right.
of a sudden to take on as an expense. And so in your head, and you're just like looking at this building, and you're like, I guess this is mine, right?
Right,
so,
right.
You just got to get it filled, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I guess, you know, if worse came to worse, I mean, if it ended up being that it was a nightmare, I mean, you might not want to, but like, you always could move in there, and you could
exactly.
personally just pay the mortgage. So like, there's not a lot of risk there, I don't feel. Now, tell me this, with the Section 8 tenant, a lot of people are afraid of Section 8 because you hear the stories about how the Section 8 tenant destroys the property, or they're really rough on it. Have you found that to be true, or has your Section 8 tenant been just the same as your other cash paying tenants?
Yeah, she's been, like I said, she's my best tenant. And
okay.
The other reason I did that was because look at your state to find out, or your city, and find out what the situation is with demand for the vouchers, the Section 8 vouchers. because there's a 3-year waiting list here in Cranston, and they do not want to be back on that waiting list because they don't have the money to pay rent. So she goes out of her way to make sure that I'm happy, just because if I report that she's not paying, you know, her portion of it, or she's damaging the property, that sort of thing, she knows that she's going to lose that voucher.
Right.
It really keeps them more, you know, one of your best tenants.
Right.
You know?
So did you do any kind of screening on her, or did you just assume because she's approved by Section 8 and that's a big long process that she's been through to get approved, that she and also that the money's guaranteed? Did you just accept her based on being approved by Section 8, or did you do any other background check?
So I did the background check, but nothing with the credit.
Okay.
She did show me her income and that sort of thing. But I did the background check. You know, obviously I showed her the apartment and everything, and, you know, felt like I could trust her, and everything's been good so far. So
how about getting approved for Section 8? Because a lot of times, and I think just about every area, they have inspections, and they might ask for things to be fixed. Was that a complicated process getting through that?
The hardest part was the lead inspection. The requirements for Section 8 are they're pretty lenient. Obviously simple stuff. Make sure there's a window, two exits, you know, an outlet in every bedroom, that sort of thing. The lead inspection was the hardest because of how naive I was, but I sanded all the floors. And the second you do that, all of the lead dust gets kicked up everywhere.
Right.
So I didn't know that. So I sanded all the floors down. I'm going through thinking I'm getting this all nice and everything. And then they tell me, when you sand, all of that lead dust that's in the floor is going to get on the ceilings. I'm like, ugh. So I had to go through. I had to make sure everything was clean anyway.
Right.
But I really went through. And then I still failed. I mean, I hired somebody to clean. I cleaned myself. And then I still failed, right?
So wow.
I was like, I called, I said, what do you want me to do here? They're like, go through. And they gave me a tip for this. Now I forget it, but it's a certain type of cleaner. What was the name of it? Not CLR, but it was three letters. I'll see if I can think of it. But
okay.
But anyway, I had to go through with this special type of cleaner to get the lead off. And then it finally passed. So that was the biggest struggle. But
wow.
Other than that, you know, really not too bad. The requirements aren't anything ridiculous.
So how could someone avoid that in the future? Is it better to not sand the floors, or do you want to just make sure you hire that special cleaner after you sand?
If you're going to do the floors, you hire somebody with the right, you know, the HEPA vacuums.
Okay.
That has the right equipment for the lead. So me just doing it on my hands and knees just made it go everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are systems that they have to, you know, capture the dust before it goes, you know, spreads.
Yeah, that's a good. You know, that's really a good thing to think about, because you're right. I mean, that I'm sure that was a nightmare to get through that. So where do you see yourself going from here? I mean, you've had a great start. This property is working out great for you. Do you see yourself buying more properties?
Yeah, absolutely. So my next. I actually, the funny thing too, just a little background, I guess, on New England, if you're not familiar. So Rhode Island it's about 50 miles south of Boston. It's kind of known that if you're in Rhode Island, you get paid a little bit less, but the living cost of living is way less.
Mm-hmm.
So I got an offer on at a job in Boston, and, you know, then I'm like, all right, how can I make this work? I want to do this, you know, big city, good money, all that stuff. So in my head, I was like, all right, well, let's go back to the real estate stuff. That's my end goal, right? So you go in and you say, all right, I can't get – they're telling me in Rhode Island I can't buy another multi-unit without 25% down, because then I'm an investor and not a person buying a house.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked out and said, all right, if I can get a 3-4 unit outside of Boston, obviously with low money down because it's very expensive up there, if I can do that and live for free – then this is the hack, right? This is the hack that makes it work. I can make the more money in Boston. I can buy another property and still live rent-free. So that's really my next move. I did get pre-approved. Because this mortgage was conventional that I have, they're actually letting me do an FHA.
That's great. So 3.5% down.
Yeah, 3.5% down. Yeah. So that this makes a ton of sense. And again, I mean, once I'm doing that, I kind of think if you're following the 2% rule, which I know some people hate, some people love, if you can get to $1 million in property value that, you know, you're collecting enough to live on your own, you know, to live without a job pretty much.
Right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for coming on the show. If someone wants to look you up, are you on social media or is there a way people can find you?
Yep. So my Instagram or Twitter, it's all just at Steve Torti.
Okay.
So Steve, T-O-R-T-I. And then I do have a website that's kind of in progress that I'm using for some advertising stuff I do, as well as real estate. I would love to get into wholesaling. It's just that's a whole nother.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother time commitment. So I've got some stuff on there for it, but it's just stevetorti.com.
If you want to look that up later on, I've got a link to Steve's contact information on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode207. If you are looking to buy a rental property, whether you're just getting started and looking for one of your 10 golden tickets where you're going to get the best rates and the best terms, or if you're an experienced investor, you've got a bunch of properties and you want to grow your portfolio, the lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She specializes in doing rental property loans, so she can definitely help you out no matter where you are in your journey. You can find out more at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com, NMLS 42056. If you need to book a car rental, but you don't want to spend hour after hour searching for the best rate possible, I want to let you know about a website that's totally free and will save you a ton of time and money. It's called autoslash.com. The way it works is you go onto AutoSlash, you submit your car rental information, when you need the car, where you need the car, and AutoSlash gets to work and they will search hundreds of different discount codes and promotions and give you the lowest rate possible. You'll get an email back and it will show you all the different car rental agencies and what their best rate is and give you instructions on how you can make the reservation. What's great is that AutoSlash continues to work after you've made your reservation. They continue to check the internet, looking for new promotions, looking for new discount codes. And if they find you a better rate, they're going to email you and let you know that you can cancel the first reservation with no penalty and rebook at the lower rate. It's really an incredible service. AutoSlash is dedicated to saving you money. And the best part about it, it's totally free. You can check it out today. Just go to autoslash.com. That's AutoSlash, autoslash.com. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the podcast. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.